This is Building Bridges, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Later on Building Bridges, AFL-CIO President Richard Plumker urges President Obama to outline a bold jobs agenda.
But now the U.S. economy is struggling. But in many black communities, Americans are in the throes of a depression. With unemployment exacting an outsized toll on African-American men and women, a coalition of New Jersey's community groups sees it as a crucial civil rights issue emerging from the country's economic woe. Quote, "We are more than a half century away from the Montgomery bus boycott, but we are dealing with issues just as pressing," said Larry Hamm, chairman of the People's Organization for Progress.
Flanking a statue of Abraham Lincoln outside the Essex County Courthouse, Hamm and like-minded activists started a 381-day protest modeled after one of the most famous battles of the civil rights era, the Montgomery bus boycott in 1955 and 6. They're calling on President Obama and Congress to institute a jobs program akin to the Works Progress Administration of the Great Depression that employed millions of unskilled Americans in public works jobs.
Unemployment is 16% among black Americans, a rate rivaling those of the 1930s. New Jersey's jobless rate is 9.5%, while the national rate is 9.1%. Let's listen to Larry Hamm, chairman of the People's Organization for Progress.
We have a campaign for jobs every day, and in fact, we were out there today, and I'm happy to say today was day 54. We've had 54 consecutive days of protests for jobs. We started on June the 27th, but actually this discussion about what to do about the job situation in our community started actually last year. Those of you who know anything about the People's Organization for Progress, you know that we are a mass democratic grassroots organization. And we're very diversified in our opinion. There's no lockstep in POP. We have debates that are very fierce sometimes, like the debate over President Obama that went on for 18 months in our organization. But we started talking about this last year. We have a very serious situation in Newark. You know, now the national unemployment rate is 9.1%. That's 1% away from depression-level unemployment. Depression-level unemployment is 10%. But in the black community nationally, the unemployment rate is something like 18%. That's almost twice depression level. In Newark, New Jersey, the unemployment rate is 22%. That's over twice depression level. And in one ward of Newark, I just got this figure the other day, one ward of Newark, the unemployment rate is 30% in the West District of Newark. Now that's the overall. If you were to segment out, for instance, black men, it wouldn't even be 50%. I know we were aghast when several years ago we heard about 50% unemployment rates. We're talking about 60, 70, 80% unemployment rates in some neighborhoods. In a country this rich, it is a disgrace to have 26 million people unemployed. It's a disgrace to have unemployment rates 50, 60, 70%. We got four colleges in Newark. Graduations this spring in May and June, and on the graduation days, people were happier, smiling, they were with their families, but now many of those graduates are not smiling because they've been pounding the pavement now for 3 months and can't find jobs. So we said, we need to do something about the job situation. We need to do something above and beyond what we have done historically. So we said, why don't we start a daily campaign to protest unemployment and to demand jobs in this country? We started that campaign on the 27th of June. When we started the campaign, we said that we meet every week, every Thursday POP meets. And we said we were going to evaluate this on a week-by-week basis because there was not a consensus within our organization. We're not a great big organization. We don't have unlimited resources. And there was some debate within our group about whether or not we could sustain a daily campaign for jobs. So we said we would do this week by week. So after 4 weeks of daily protests, we came to the conclusion that we could sustain this. And people said, well, how long should we do this? And we began to look back at historical precedents. And in the Black community, everybody always looks back to Montgomery, Alabama in 1955, to Rosa Parks and the Montgomery bus boycott. And we said, if our people back then who didn't have cell phones, rapid copiers, who didn't have iPads and all this technology, if they could sustain the Montgomery bus boycott for 381 days, we should at least be able to protest for jobs that long. And we decided in August that we would push forward with this campaign for jobs for 381 days. We gather every day at the intersection of West Market Street and Springfield Avenue in Newark, in front of the old Essex County Courthouse, Mimi, and there is a statue of Abraham Lincoln. So we said, we ain't got to go to Washington to the Lincoln Memorial. We got our own Lincoln Memorial right here. Let's do it right here at the intersection of two of the major traffic arteries in Newark. So we're there every day from 4:30 to 6, Monday through Friday. Then we moved two blocks to Broad and Market Street. That's where we were today, the heart of downtown Newark, from 12 to 2. And we come back on Sunday to West Market and Springfield Avenue. And what are we attempting to do? Is this just about doing this every day? No. We're trying to occupy a particular piece of territory to raise this issue about jobs. We not only want to protest for 381 days, but we want to turn the Lincoln Plaza into our own Tahrir Square and have hundreds of people out there every day. That's our eventual goal. Right now, it's a dozen, it's 15, 20, 25 people out there sometimes on a daily basis. But what we want to do is get hundreds of people out there. And what we've come today is to ask for your support, to ask you to join us. If we were to get all of our organizations, and we have hundreds of organizations, if we would get all of our grassroots organizations, all of our churches, all of our union locals to each take one day, we would not only be talking about the Montgomery bus boycott, we would be talking about the Newark protest movement that would catch fire not only in Newark, but maybe people in other parts of the country would replicate this. Already we've gotten calls from people in Florida, in Philadelphia, saying they want to do the same thing. Our number one demand, we want a national jobs program. We want a new WPA. If we got trillions of dollars for war, we got enough money to put all the people who are out of work back to work. That's our number one demand for a national jobs program. But this is not just for jobs only, but for economic justice in general. The next demand is tied right to our demand for a national jobs program. We want an end to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya, and we want the trillions of dollars that are being spent on war to be spent on jobs and housing and education and healthcare in this country. Our third demand, we want a moratorium. We want an end to home foreclosures and people being thrown in the streets. In some places in Essex County, we got the highest foreclosure rates in the state. In Irvington, New Jersey, they already have a 40% foreclosure rate in that town. And they say next year, it may go as high as 80%. Can you imagine that? 80% of the homes in one town boarded up. But you can go through Irvington and Newark now and see block after block boarded up. And we need to point out, we gave the banks, they're talking about the way to economic recovery. The way to economic recovery is not trillion-dollar bank bailouts, not tax breaks for the super rich. The way to economic recovery is to put the people who need to work and want to work back to work in this country. That is the way to economic recovery. And what did the grateful bankers do for our trillion-dollar tax bailout? They raised their saving accounts rates. They raised their checking accounts rates. They raised the interest on their loans. They foreclosed on our homes. And they turned around to put salt in the wound, gave themselves million-dollar bonuses. We should be throwing picket lines up at all of these banks, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, J.P. Chase Morgan. We should be throwing picket lines up in all of these places. Now, our next demand for economic justice, I thought was a kind of new demand, but when I went back to Why We Can't Wait by Dr. King, I see it was something that he was talking about. We want universal health care in this country so every person can get the medical attention and the medicines that they need. The other part of this program for economic justice tied to our daily protests is we want an end to the attempts to destroy public education in the United States of America. If you can't see it, you are blind. What is all this stuff about charter schools and special schools and closing schools? It's about the destruction of public education. The tracking system that we have is not enough. Look, in cities all over this country, they are closing schools by the scores. They may close as many as 20 public schools in Newark this fall. That's going to overcrowd the schools that remain open, but they are not worried about, you think those people really care? They're about setting up a public education system that in the final analysis is only going to benefit them, not going to benefit us. I don't know if you know it, but free public education came out of the Reconstruction, was a creation of the black freedmen. We are not going to accept the destruction and privatization of public education. And the next demand that we have is that we want affordable college education for all of our young people. We are turning generations of college graduates into debt slaves. They're graduating with $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 worth of loans. They'll be older than me before they can even finish paying off these loans. This country is rich enough. If Libya could provide free college education, this country should be able to provide free college education for its young people. So these are some of the demands, the core demands that we are raising on a daily basis with these daily pickets. And what I'm asking for today, I'm asking for your support. I'm asking for each organization to pick a day and bring your people over. You bring your people over for our thing, and we'll bring our people over for your thing. You know, we gotta get like this gangland mentality. You bring your gang, I'll bring my gang. And our gangs will reinforce and support each other. Now imagine if we could get a spot in Newark where we had gathering out in the open in front of everybody, several hundred people every day, and maybe after 4 or 5 months, it wouldn't be several hundred, it'd be 500 or 600. It might be 1,000. It could be something unlike we have ever seen in the city of Newark. We can do it. We in day 54, and we plan to go 381 days, but we need your support. It's time for us to fight back. We're not even there where we have the political authority and wherewithal really to make a boycott successful. We're at the very beginning. What we have to do right now is break through the consciousness of our people, break through the weapons of mass distraction that have our people's minds on everything except the fire that is on their behinds. We gotta break through. We have to do bold and daring things
that have not been done before in numbers that we have not had. And we can't just do them in Washington. And we can't just do them in New York. We have to do these things in the communities where our people, where our constituents live, where the people who are most likely to support us congregate and live. And in that way, we stir up the consciousness. There's only been about a dozen of us every day out there. But right now, we don't even have to hold our signs up. The people drive by and they're honking their horns, they're throwing their fists out the window, they're showing us that they're in solidarity, they understand, they agree with our message. And along with this daily campaign, I want to say this. On Thursday night, at our General Assembly meeting, the People's Organization for Progress voted to support the Verizon workers, and all of us should be supporting the Verizon workers. This is the period that we're in, when we have to take down the walls of separation, as we've been trying to do. This is nothing new. We've been trying to do this for the last 40 years. But the urgency of the moment is upon us. The people are suffering in ways that are unimaginable. All you have to do is come to a POP meeting. Every week, people that we have never known before are coming to us with the most horrendous incidents of police brutality. Just Thursday night, we had a packed house. We had five representatives of the U.S. Justice Department for the first time at a meeting of the People's Organization for Progress to take testimony from the people, because we call in the Justice Department. We know that just as those old white Southern racist police forces were in cahoots with the Klan during the civil rights movement, it's the same thing in Newark, except the uniforms are not white, the uniforms are blue. And just as those Southern police forces needed federal takeover, we calling for a federal takeover of the Newark Police Department. So they were here. People are being thrown into the streets. People are being evicted. People are losing their homes. People don't have money to buy food. People are suffering. And we have to connect ourselves to these issues that people are confronting in their daily lives, that this is what we must do. We must tie these local issues. It's one thing, we must talk to people about imperialism, but imperialism is a worldwide system. The same imperialism that is engaged in the recolonization of Africa is the same imperialism that is engaged in the immiseration of the people right here on the streets of Newark and New York City. The same way they oppress and exploit abroad is the same thing that they are doing here at home. But we have to be sharp enough, and we have to give an analysis that's clear enough so that the everyday person, the person that rides the bus, and the person that rides the subway, and the women that take their children to daycare, and the people that go to church on Sunday and go to the mosque on Friday, we must give them a way to understand this in the clearest and most simple terms. So I hope that you will support us in this effort, and we will try to continue as much as we can with the limited resources and people that we have to support you in your efforts. Thank you very much. Power to the people.
And now, at a recent forum sponsored by the Christian Science Monitor, AFL-CIO President Richard Kramka urged President Obama to propose bold solutions on the jobs crisis and not nibble around the edge on the issue, and that history will judge him and working people will judge him on what he proposes on the jobs crisis.
Labor Day marks a tough time for working people. Record unemployment, stagnant income, record foreclosures. This is a moment that working people, and quite frankly, history, will judge President Obama on his presidency. Will he focus on bold solutions on the job crisis, or will he continue to work with the Tea Party to offer cuts to middle-class programs like Social Security, all the while pretending that the deficit is where our economic problems really lie? This Labor Day, working people are looking for three things. jobs, jobs, and jobs. We have an economy that has every sign of trailing off into what could be a second recession, and we have no people talking about it. The solutions that they offer in Europe have been counter-effective. If you look at what Greece, the austerity program, the more they impose the austerity program on them, the deeper their recession goes and the higher their debt goes. The idea was to try to get them out of debt, but the solution that they offer is getting them back in. Same thing, I think, is applicable here. The more that we move away from helping the economy grow to slashing it, the more likely we are to go into recession and the less likely we are to create jobs. Even the most optimistic predictions are that the economy will grow at 1.5% or maybe 2% over the next couple years, and that in and of itself is insufficient to dig us out of the job hole that we find ourselves in. So working people of this Labor Day are looking to see who's going to step up to the plate. This is a moment that working people in history will judge not only the president, but every politician out there. If he puts all of his emphasis and focuses on job creation, it's going to give them one picture. And if he continues to do little nibbly things around the end that aren't going to make a difference and aren't going to solve a problem, that'll give him another picture. He's going to give a speech about job creation, and we'll see. If he's talking about another percent or two break on a tax here and doing something with patent control and doing 3 years down the road something with an infrastructure bank, that's not going to get the job done. Everybody knows that. You know, he has to be talking about the scale and with the urgency that they went after the debt ceiling fund. If everybody would apply that same scale and urgency to job creation, we could get out of here. CBO reports that if the Bush tax cuts aren't extended, 50% of the deficit goes away in 10 years. 50%. CEOs have never done better. When do they get to share in the sacrifice? The very wealthy have never done better. When do they get to share in the sacrifice? He's going to give a job speech, and I hope that he really does focus all his energy, and I hope he'll come to bold solutions on the job crisis. The thing that I said to him in the meeting, I said to him, do not look at what is possible. Look at what is necessary. The American public wants solutions, and just because the Republicans, you think this is the only thing that's politically plausible, that doesn't mean you should propose that. That means they control the agenda. If you only propose what you think they'll accept, they control the agenda. I urged him to propose what was necessary to solve the problem, and I hope he does that. I think he can. I hope he does. I've urged him to. All of us in the labor movement have urged him. All of us in the progressive community have urged him to. People in the black community have urged him to do it. People in the Hispanic community have urged him to do it, and we hope he does it. I think he made a strategic mistake when he confused job crisis with the deficit crisis a number of months ago, when he would talk about job creation and in the same sentence talk about deficit reduction, and people got the two confused, and he helped with that. And I think that was a strategic mistake, and he started playing on the Republican ground of deficit reduction. Look, we don't have a short-term deficit crisis. It does not exist. We have a short-term jobs crisis. And if you fix the job crisis, the deficit crisis goes away. And as the CBO says, let the tax deficits expire and half the deficit problem goes away. So you have all of that money that you could be investing in the future. We have a country that's crumbling. The American Society of Civil Engineers gives us a D minus. It says we have a $2.2 trillion deficit in old infrastructure and a $2 trillion deficit to get us into the 21st century, with high-speed rail and the smart grid and all the things necessary for us to compete. We went from the top five in infrastructure to the almost 20th now. And it's going to go even further if we don't do something about it. And you have people saying, let's cut from the original baseline that is only one-fifth large enough as it is. So that contributes to why people are frustrated, why they're upset, and why they say we need leadership. As I said earlier, I mean, I think that this is a moment where working people, and I think history, quite frankly, are going to judge the president on his presidency. And whether he commits to job creation in a bold way or whether he doesn't. This economy has four drivers only. 72% of the economy is driven by consumer spending. Consumers aren't spending. Their wages are stagnant. They can't continue to spend at a level that will increase the economy because they don't have the money unless they borrow. They tried that. We did that for 20-some years. We had a low-wage, high-consumption strategy that didn't work. So unless workers start to get some more money and a fairer share, you're not going to see workers or consumers drive the economy. The second thing is business investment. They're sitting on a mound of money. They're not spending any money, and they're not going to spend any money because they say there's no demand out there. They'll also throw in around the edges, oh, we're confused about regulation, and we don't know what's happening here. You know, they don't have any demand. Because consumers aren't buying because they're stagnant wages. They can't buy. The third driver is net exports. We haven't had net exports in this country for almost two decades. And you're not going to have. And if you keep passing trade bills that keep sucking jobs out and give us a disadvantage, like the South Korea trade bill or Colombia, you're going to lose more jobs and have less of that. So that's not the issue. The fourth driver is government spending. And you had an extraordinary fiscal input with the stimulus program, but when that was coming into effect, at the same time, the states were contracting. So the state and local government spending was negating much of the federal spending. So we asked for, and part of the stimulus package, you'll remember a third of it, was aid to state and local governments to defray that. Well, all the stimulus money, infrastructure money, is about to expire. All the state and local money is about to expire, and they're contracting. And all of the state governments are drawing down, and the federal government's starting to cut down on the spending. So what's going to drive the economy? Four drivers. So what's going to do it? And if there's nothing to do it, if you don't have some investment from government now, what will do it? And if the answer is nothing, people are worried. That's a recession. That's another one that could tend even deeper. That's what we face. And that's why it takes bold leadership. That's why somebody, hopefully the president, will step up and say, listen, you want to end those deficits? My God, we can cut half them in half by letting the Bush tax cuts expire. Put 14 million people back to work and trust me, the rest of them go bye-bye. There are no deficit problem. There's no Social Security problem because you got people paying into it rather than taking out of it. That takes leadership. And we're hoping that he'll provide that leadership.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.